Enjoy.
And we are back. Well, I'm back. Your faithful host. Let me cut that. So I'm doing this from my phone, so there's going to be some hiccups, interruptions possibly. But I'm here, as always, to bless you with another episode of Totally Unrelated, my free podcast with zero advertising at this point. That's not to say that I wouldn't be interested in taking on some advertising, but I skip it on the podcast that I listen to, so I'm just going to keep this as my personal diary, kind of a to-the-world sort of a situation, where I invite my friends, and Jay comes in when he's available, and we'll just do it like that, and if it turns out that I need money, or I get an extra 10,000 listeners, and somebody approaches me, well, then we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Otherwise, you just get to hear me rant ad-free. Richmond, Virginia, guys, what a blast with Chris Porter, who, if you don't know, was on, I think, season 4 of Last Comic Standing, might have been season 2. I don't remember which one it was, but, he's important to me in my growth as a comic because he was the first comedian I ever watched do 6 shows in a row. Because when I was first starting out, John Craig, who I believe was the first guest ever on this podcast, that was his first MC weekend, was hosting for Chris Porter at the Dayton Funny Bone. Justin Leon was the feature act, and they're both from Kansas City. And, it was just like one of our friends was making it, you know, that's how we felt at the time because John had gotten his week after being in the Clash of the Comics and then the Titans of the Clash, which is the finals of the year-long contest. He got rewarded with a week. I don't know if he placed at all, but he had a good set. Anyway, he introduced us to Chris. Chris didn't really hang out with us at all. Justin Leon was very gracious with his advice and mentorship as a comic at the point that he was at that time. And I remember being very appreciative of their conversation. Chris Porter told us on Sunday, he said, because we were all hanging out, he's like, "You guys all comics?" And we're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Cool. Enjoy this time. It's all downhill from here." And I didn't know what he meant. We all kind of laughed at it. But I get it now in a way because you're never going to be that close to your people that you started with. So I talked to him about that this weekend. We went out after the shows and hung out during the day, went out to breakfast, bought me lunch, bought me beers. Super awesome dude. And he's not just like a one-trick pony. I feel like his passion lies in wherever it takes him. He's got some musical interests and talents, so check out his Instagram and follow Chris Porter. But it was just cool hanging out with somebody that you've seen go up and down through the comedy ranks. And he said about me, when I told him about the story about it's all downhill from here, he said, yeah, that starting out for him in comedy, it was like being in a gang. And I thought that was really interesting insight because that's definitely how it felt. I started with like my improv group, which was Karen Jaffe, Dave Brinkman, Nathan Hall, Diane Williams, I believe, George, can't remember George's last name. Travis was our teacher, Travis Clyburn, and couple other people. Who else was? Oh, Brock Shank was there for a while. Bunch of people. And that like still are doing comedy today. Some do and some don't. But it was like our gang. We went everywhere together. We supported each other for the most part. And I don't know at what point gangs disband in real life. Like, I don't know if you ever get out of a gang, but I still feel like they're all my friends, but we definitely don't roll like a posse anymore. Laura Feld. Sorry, Laura, if you're listening. She's 1 of 6. She is actually probably 3 of 6. Sorry, 1 of 6. Didn't mean to put you out of order. The 6 Lauras who are the tribal council for the podcast. If you don't know, if you're just joining in, there's a kind of like a board of directors, certain directions that we take on the podcast. We refer to the six Lauras, and they tell us which direction to go. So I think the only direction that they're telling me right now is get on with it, motherfucker. I drove to Richmond in my new car. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. It's, I feel like Price is Right. Da-na-na-na. I'm tone deaf, so. And I'm like, oh my God, new car. But a bank owns it because I'm just making payments. But it's a Subaru because I was like, I don't want to drive that gay Prius anymore. So now I'm a full-fledged lesbian in a Subaru Forester. It's kind of masculine, though, because it's gray, like my Prius. Not one of those fairy colors like teal. To be honest, it would be a huge compliment if somebody confused me with being gay. In fact, that's happened. It's usually in the South or Southern-type communities, more rural. They think I'm gay, which I take as a huge compliment, because I think what they're actually saying is anybody that dresses that sharp or has nice shoes on must be a homosexual. So if that's the equation, I'll be your huckleberry. Anyway, the Subaru is nice. It sits up so much higher than the Prius. It was a long fought battle. I've been researching this all year since before the beginning of the year. And to be honest, the Subaru Forester was way far down on the list. It was one of those cars that I always respected and liked in the Subaru lineup, but the Subaru Impreza was way closer to the top of the list. And when it came down to, I don't remember, I think it was episode 87 when I was getting ready to go on a road trip to Pennsylvania for a one-nighter with Steve Sabo, and I said that the Prius has been good, knock on wood. Well, the Prius started conking out on that very trip. And I got it, you know, full engine tune-up and everything like that, but I just sort of felt like the engine wasn't as strong as it once was. And it's just at the age where it just needed to be babied. And when you've been in a relationship with a car for a period of time, sometimes you're able to transition the way you drive it. But I found that I wasn't. And so I knew it was time to get a new car, because especially with this trip that I'm on right now, which is a 3-week trip. And so I got the car the Monday before I left for Richmond, and was on the road on Thursday, 7-hour drive, no problems. It's dark gray, so the heat kind of comes at you in a way that I don't remember my Prius. It's a little bit darker shade than my Prius, but my Prius was still dark gray. But it's got so much headroom and so much space. I was thinking about getting the Mazda CX-3, which is a pretty rare car, but this is what I've noticed. Since I got the Subaru, I've seen tons of them. Not even tons, just more than I did normally. And every time I see somebody driving a Mazda CX-3, it's always a woman, and they're either old or young, but they're very small people. So I feel like the CX-3 is like, for a small person who feels intimidated by a big SUV maybe. I liked it because it was kind of a cross between an SUV and a car, sat up higher, all-wheel drive, which was my standard for a car this go-around, and then mileage and comfort being kind of neck and neck for second. Well, my dad has a Forester, a 2011 Forester, and he brought it by not too long ago, and it's got this giant moonroof. And I was like, ooh, I like this. And it's kind of akin to the BMW X1 moonroof. But I just parked next to a BMW X1 the other day, and I was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't get this car. It's so much smaller. But I'm really enjoying the space that I get. Gas mileage is the same as the CX-3, I mean, within a mile per gallon. And in its class, I feel like it's got the most space and room for the gallons per mile, which is 32. It's a 2.5 fuel injected, 2.5i, 4-cylinder. That doesn't mean anything to me other than it's a lot more power pickup and handling than my Prius. Happy with that. So the problem was, is that I drove out here for 7 hours to get to Richmond, and I left my Easy Pass for the tolls in my other car. So I've lost my ass in tolls, which I think you get a discounted rate with the Easy Pass. I think you pay like 50% of what the toll is by paying through Easy Pass. And I might be wrong about that. You might only get like 10-cent break or something. I don't know. But stopping at every toll and having to whip out some cash was... ugh. What am I, some sort of Amish person? Anyway, I had kind of had to reevaluate the way I feel about some of the jokes that I'm doing, particularly one joke that I've been doing for probably about 6 or 7 months now. I say 6 or 7 months, I've probably been doing it for 2 years. But it was a Caitlyn Jenner joke, and it was kind of just built on pun, I guess, because in my closer, I am having a conversation with my 6-year-old niece who does exist, but she's no longer 6. And she sent us a card one time where she wrote some jokes for me in the card. And one of the jokes was, why did the chicken cross the playground? And the answer is obviously to get to the other slide, which is a great joke. But it got the response you just had in your own head, which was like, was the same audible response I would get from audiences when I would tell it. Now, I say that to say this. I know it's not that funny of a joke. I know it's a kid's joke. A kid's joke to tell to adults, and adults are supposed to have some sort of a reaction. But the joke that comes after that is so much more hard-hitting. And I tell the first joke, the slide joke, to kind of ease the tension. I don't want to give away too much of the magic, but I guess I was setting up a scenario where you think the next joke's also going to be very innocent and childlike when it's not. However, I didn't like that the joke didn't get a response at all. So I started writing another joke about this Caitlyn Jenner joke that I do where my niece is mispronouncing all the words in it because she's 6. And I just found out that one of the words that I was using is actually a word that other people were using as like a slur. Right, and I didn't know that it was a slur, but I guess anything can be a slur, like the word nigger is a slur, and the word wigger with a W is also a slur, and even though one of them is completely stupid, actually they're both, let's be honest, they're both stupid words, but, you know, it's the context that in which you use it that makes any word hateful or whatever, and nobody can offend me without my consent, and blah, 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 blah. Well, I read this story about a transgendered woman who was assaulted by a group of men, pretty viciously beaten from the account that I read. And the word that when people were like, what's going on here or whatever, they were like, the word that they were using was the word that was in my joke. I don't even want to justify it by saying it again. I feel as though it's not, it would be like me being completely white and using the N-word or me being Jewish or not Jewish and using Jewish slurs or whatever. You know, I mean, I've just never been more aware of being in touch with the community at which you are offending. For instance, I am in this white black family. Therefore, I can make fun of my family. But you better not make fun of my family if you're not in my family. That's kind of always been my rule coming up in Yellow Springs. I can make fun of my sister. You cannot make fun of my sister. I can make fun of my mom. You cannot make fun of my mom. And I use those rules in comedy right now. I didn't realize that. Maybe even until I'm just saying it now because of how much humor was based on us growing up in a small community like Yellow Springs where I felt like humor and athleticism were probably the two most redeeming qualities popular people had. You were either good at sports or good at making people laugh. And if it was like being smart, that's further down the line. But the class clowns and the athletes got the, maybe good at both. Watch out. That's all I know. The air conditioning just kicked on, and I don't like the way that sounds, so let's move and turn it off. Anyway, I saw... let's just turn that off. I saw this flaw in my act, and after reading the article and realizing that I was using a slur against a group of people that I feel like have already been marginalized enough, my feelings... well, let's put it this way. I don't think I've ever had an out gay person on my podcast. If I have, I forget. But I have had several, at least two transgender women on my podcast, and it is out of a respect for the platform of inclusion. And I'm not saying that I want to go out and find marginalized groups of people, and that's what my fan base is going to be. And I just knew these people were advocates in their community, and I felt like having them on the podcast would be educational for me and anybody else that maybe listened, maybe not. It was, my intentions were very selfish in my own education, desire to be educated. And I think the byproduct of that is reading some of these articles, being aware of what these women and men are going through, and feeling marginalized myself as somebody who was learning disabled. I mean, we all have something, some label that we attached to ourselves when we were six that we carry with us for the rest of our life. Maybe you didn't get that label till you were 15 or 16, 17, 18, 25. I don't know. But my son is going through these tests right now. He's 15, about to be a freshman in high school. And when he was younger, he had a pervasive speech delay. He didn't start speaking in full sentences until he was about four. And full vocabulary of words, but didn't really string them together. A lot of signs, sign language signs and stuff like that. Fully active, fully engaged as a child, imaginative play, everything that you'd look for. But there was some diagnosis of being on the autism spectrum, which I felt at the time was probably just to help him get access to the most care until whatever it was figured out, but very much a borderline situation. Started kindergarten, I think at the age of four, and that didn't take. So he repeated it again at five. He's got a May birthday, so he would have been turning five, at the very end of the year of kindergarten, but we thought, why not start him early, get him used to the school system thing, and the recommendation was for him to do it again. He did, and hasn't had much problems since then, paying attention somewhat, but he usually gets his ass in gear halfway through the year and starts trying, and summer's hard to recover from. I get it. But he's going through these tests now to see if there's still some issues or if he needs some extra help in class. It's just like takes a long time for that. I think this process started maybe 2 years ago. So it's just now coming down to the testing. And I think he's dealing with some stigma about being labeled, doesn't want to be labeled. And I totally get that because I lived with my label. I mean, I'm still dealing with it, but I grew up with it and it kept me from doing this for as long as anything had. This being the primary thing, being afraid to read, afraid to write, and afraid for everybody to know how stupid I was, which clearly I do not care about that now, the stupid part. And so I'm in Richmond, and I'm doing shows, and people are coming out from the last time I was here. And I got to see Chris Allen, you know Chris Allen from the podcast, and from being a hilarious black man comic. A friend of Mark Normand, a friend of Vince Morris, friend of every comedian that we love on the podcast. And he came out. We got to hang out. That's good to see old comedy friends. But childhood classmate. I was in classes with this gentleman from the time I was in first grade until he graduated the year before me in high school, Larry Edwards. Who was, I think he played football and probably did some track too. And I think we played basketball together. We were, you know, we weren't like of best friends, but our crews, at least part of my crews intersected enough that I would pick him out of a lineup anywhere in any city. If I saw him at the airport, I'd be like, Larry, Larry. But it was good to see him. Came out to the Sunday show. He's the cover art, blurry picture, because his wife kind of took the picture while she had her hands full. And she snapped two pictures, both blurry. But I thought, you know, I don't want to use this for the cover because Yellow Springs, that's why. But I know he's a successful businessman. He owns his own business. And, you know, we're just sitting there talking after the show. We didn't talk for more than a few minutes or whatever. But I reminisced with him about how growing up in Yellow Springs had a lot to do with how funny you were. And that's part of the thing that kept me out of comedy, I think, as well, was feeling like my classmates and peers, people that I grew up with, would know I was trading in on something that was very matter of fact in our society in Yellow Springs as kids, which was comedy. It was just everybody was funny. And I guess what I felt disingenuous about was that everybody knew I wasn't the funniest guy. You had like Christian Hogsby, Mike Page. I mean, there was a guy that came before us all who actually made, I don't know if, I honestly, I don't know what Dave Chappelle had to do with that, being from that area. He left, I think, when he was in like eighth grade before high school. But I don't know. I mean, I remember Dave telling me one time he left his notebook on the bus and some kids found it and were just reading like his ideas for jokes and stuff like that. But it was the most embarrassing thing he had experienced at that time. And I remember growing up being on the bus as being just, it was about making fun of people. We'd have crack fights. It had nothing to do with drugs. We were cracking on each other. And whoever was the winner was like the coolest guy on the bus. You get like the pole position, which was the short seat in the back, I think, which was for handicapped kids. But my bus didn't have any handicapped kids on, at least not any physically handicapped kids. Nobody in a wheelchair. It was the best childhood I can imagine, because when you're being made fun of in a public forum, in a closed public forum like the bus, that's like kids that kind of live close to you typically, and it's like a certain amount of period. But I really got, I was able to laugh at myself and my friends, and we were able to laugh at each other. I don't think anybody ever started crying. If you did, it would have made it worse. It would have just made it worse. And I don't know what kids are dealing with today. I know my son got a pair of Jordans. They're not like Jordans. They're low tops, and they're probably like Jumpmans or something like that. But he wore them to school one time, and somebody said they looked like a mattress. And I laughed. I laughed, even though he was embarrassed and didn't want to wear them anymore. I thought that was hilarious, because they kind of do. And I thought, you know what? The shoes are too nice for you to not wear them. So you can wear them skateboarding. You can wear them to play basketball, whatever you want to do in them. They're not even, got them at like the outlet. They're not even like super expensive. They're probably like 2 years old or last year's models or something. They're only like $50, which I'm not saying $50 pair of shoes is cheap necessarily. I typically spend $30 on a pair of shoes. That's my, that the problem with that is that because I always want to buy a pair of shoes for $30, I have a lot of shoes. That's like my only trigger. Like, are they under 30? Well, I'll buy them. But it's not like I just buy $30 shoes. I like to buy like $60, $80 shoes that have been on sale, or I find them online, or I buy three pair, and that's why I get them for... It's a long story, guys. I got shoe problems, but I don't think my son's able to deal with the jokes about himself as well as probably I did. But I know he's in a much bigger school with much more diverse cast of characters. Maybe not... as diverse as Yellow Springs, not openly diverse, but I know there's some diversity there. His class probably has several hundred kids in it, whereas my class that I graduated with had about 35. Anyway, long story short, it's good to see Larry and catch up. It was great to be in Richmond, and now I am in Albany, New York. Been here all week, and it has been... What's the word I'm looking for? Solitudicus. I have been in a state of solitude until last night. We had our first show the Thursday night show, and just a lot of downtime and a lot of alone time, which probably has been good for me. But I am glimpsing the next 2 weeks. I have this weekend and the next weekend in Syracuse. So really, come Monday, it's just another week. One more week left on the road. And this will be the longest road trip I've ever done by myself, 3 weeks out, which it's rare. I've worked for more than 3 weeks in a row, for sure, plenty of times, but never without coming back home. So I'm not lonely yet, but I do feel bits of my sanity slipping away at times when I do get to talk to people. I was talking to the comics last night, and I just felt so long-winded trying to make a point and forgetting what I was talking about. I have had a streak now of not drinking till after the shows, which is something I know the council, the Lauras, the six Lauras, will all be able to tell you that that was probably the very first New Year's resolution that I broke. Was I was very adamant about not drinking before I went on stage or taking a drink on stage with me. And so what I did in Richmond was I would have them deliver me a drink on stage, but I wouldn't even, I mean, I only have 25 minutes. It's not like I got a whole lot of time to be taking sips. So it was more of just the aesthetic of having it up there. And then I just transitioned to not having it at all. And it's not like I'm a fucking alcoholic, but I guess in some regard I am. It's really hard for me to say no to alcohol. Now, that being said, I don't drink during the week. I don't drink when I'm not working. I'm not a fucking animal. I only drink when I work. But that's the problem. And I don't need it to work. I think it's just like, I like drinking, and they're going to give it to me for free, so why would I pay for it at home? And even when I like go out to dinner with people, and they're like, hey, I want to grab a beer, and I'm like, not really. I got responsibilities, which I don't. I don't have responsibilities. I don't know why I'm not having that beer. Anyway, didn't drink till after the show last night, and I've noticed this. Not having a drink till after the show, it hits me so much harder. Like I had the drink during Giannis Pappas, who's the headliner I'm working with this week, who is very, very funny, very casual, but very important kind of points that he's making with his punchlines. I can't wait to pick his brain and annoy the shit out of him. But I had a drink last night after his set, and I could tell it was affecting me pretty quickly, but then it went away. I think part of what it is that if I have a drink before I go on stage, going on stage gives you kind of an adrenaline rush, which wipes out the alcohol feeling. But if you have two or three drinks before you go on stage, then there's really, your blood is thinner. And I was starting to notice when I would drink before, even if it was just one drink, even if it was just I started a drink on stage, I would speed up or talk so fast that then I would mess up my words. And I had that happen to me last night, even though I wasn't drinking. There was a few bits I did that were a little bit longer than I'm used to, or they didn't get laughs in the right spots. So I found myself speeding up and kind of stumbling over a word. And here's the thing about stumbling over a word. If you stumble on a word, like say you're trying to say binocular in your setup, you're like, you know what's crazy about binoculars? But you say, you know what's crazy about binoculars? Like you just stutter just for half a second. If that joke at the punchline usually registers as like a 6 or a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10, now that joke has been halved. The most it can get is like a 2 or a 3. 3.5 at the most. Stumbling on a word in the setup directly impacts the math on the other side of that equal sign. And I noticed that. I did two jokes last night where I stumbled, and it just, I was like, well, shit, I'm not drinking. What caused that to happen? And I think it really is just going too fast, which not regulating your speed is a sign of somebody who's been drinking, which is why drunk drivers crash or drive so fucking fast sometimes. I don't know if you've ever seen it or if you've ever experienced. You had a couple cocktails and suddenly you want to feel the fucking all the horsepower behind that Ford Festiva. And that's all she wrote. So, in summation, Sold a bunch of shirts in Richmond, too. Thank you to everybody that came out and bought a t-shirt. That really helped. I had to get my hotel. I didn't have to. I got my own hotel in Richmond. There's a deal. There's a very nice hotel very close to the property, but they were sold out. And they have a condo as well, but the condo is with the general manager. And I just sort of have a thing about not staying with my boss. And also, I stayed there before. I knew I would just have much more self-esteem going into each show if I stayed in a hotel. And I sold enough shirts to still make money on top of it. It would have been nice to save the money, but, you know, shit happens. Murdered it last night in t-shirt sales, so much so that I'm like, I hate selling t-shirts when I don't have all the sizes, and I'm down to like three extra larges, plenty of larges, plenty of mediums, plenty of smalls. Nobody ever buys a small anyway. I don't know why. I mean, I maybe sold two last week. But then I get to this point where I'm like, I'm out of double XL, I'm out of triple XL, I shouldn't even sell shirts. But last night, I sold my last extra large in the black version, and the guy was like, oh, I'll take a large, I'm just going to give it to my son anyway. So I'm like, okay. I don't know, I feel guilty about selling these t-shirts, even though it's like a huge source of income, and I almost have to do it, especially if you're going to stay out on the road for 3 weeks, because I had to get my own hotel through Ignite Hospitality. Shout out to Ignite Hospitality. If you do not know what Ignite Hospitality is, let me give them a pitch. Let me give them a free advertising pitch right now. If you're a performer or somebody that travels, and I think he specializes in performers, people that do performance, comedians, musicians, people that are like selling tickets to a show or whatever. So what I do is I get on this guy's website, and you just Google Ignite Hospitality, and you'll find the form, and you fill out what city, where you're trying to stay, what your typical budget for a hotel is. He acquires the hotel in a city that you requested, and then you pay him a fraction of what it would be to stay there. And in return, you give them tickets to your show, and you leave them positive. So, you know, you leave them a review. It doesn't necessarily have to be positive, but I don't think that they would be as happy if you left them negative. So the situation has arisen where I've stayed in places where I didn't feel like there was positive feedback to give. So I gave honest feedback that wasn't a slam. You know what I mean? Like, you can review something without trying to shit all over it just because you didn't like it. You can give an objective review that's not 5 stars and it's not 0 stars. So that's what I've tried to do. However, the place I stayed at last week, the Fairfield Inn, in East Greenbush, New York, which is right outside of Albany for 3 nights. It was fantastic. It was fantastic. And next week I'm staying at another Hampton Inn, which is what I'm in right now, but the club's paying for this one. So look up Ignite Hospitality if you're a performer and you need a spot on the road. I know guys who are career comics 20, 25 years in or whatever, and I've referred them to Ignite Hospitality, and they just started using them within the last year, Steve Sabo being one of those guys. He got rooms for Rock on the Range in Columbus when people were price gouging for hotels. Hotel prices went up to like a place that was like $89 was charging $249 for rooms during that weekend. And he got one for like $25 a night. So, Ignite Hospitality, thank you very much. There's your free ad for the week. And I think I'm going to wrap it here. I was hoping Jay was going to give a call in, but apparently he was running late to Kansas City yesterday, got there just before the showtime, got out of the car, got on stage. Haven't spoke with him about it, but we texted a little bit about it, so he's probably recovering today. I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you guys are enjoying the podcast. And oops, I dropped you there. I don't know what we lost. I switched over to change to the outro music. See, when I do this, when I do this on my phone, there's some learning curve issues going on. So what I'm going to try to do is start the outro music before I actually end the episode. And it's coming in the background a little bit. You may have noticed this. Normally I do all the music in post when I'm doing this on my computer at home. But I'm here and I love you and I want you to stay unrelated.
seems kind of lost, like a southern bound wind. She whispers, it's okay, we'll dance the night away. But when I see the rain coming, it sings the sweet song.
Feel so lonely inside, I don't know what to do. for listening. Download more episodes from the Podbean app. Also available at iTunes and Stitcher or at totallyunrelated.com.